Sometimes when I talk to you, well, I just don't know what to say. Except that, oh Lord, please show us your way. Father, there's plenty of food and people are hungry. There's plenty of love and people are lonely. There's plenty of money, but not enough to spend. And so much sadness and a whole.
Manage mine. My name is Jawanza Hetepu, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm warning you. This is a warning. It's a good warning. You're in for a powerful, powerful, powerful show. I am so very blessed, humbled, and honored to have as my special guest today a sister who I love interviewing this sister. I mean, I must admit, I've interviewed a lot of people in my career, and none have I enjoyed more than my special guest today. I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. You get yourself together, you can get ready, because you are going to want to take notes, and I guarantee you I'm going to give you information on how you can contact her after this show is over. As a matter of fact, I want to encourage you also to call in. Have any questions, comments? The call-in number, let me tell it to you right now, is 515-605-9727. Again, that's 515-605-9727. My special guest, everyone, today is Shechem Amhetra M. Ma'at. That's right. She's back. I heard her. You're like, what? Yep, she's back. Shechem Amhetra M. Ma'at. Let me tell you a little bit about her. She has been a meditation practitioner and instructor for over 35 years. Companies and institutions with which she has worked include American University Life Pieces to Masterpieces Summer Staff, D.C. Child and Family Services, Social Workers and Nurses, One World Center for Autism, also the Healthcare System for Child Services, the D.C. Healthy Babies, and the NAACP's Health is the New Wealth, and George Washington University as a substitute teacher for their stress management curriculum. For 5 years, she has taught meditation to both institutions, institutional staff, and middle school as well, middle school students and D.C. public charter schools. Since 2012, she has been implementing meditation and scripting life coaching programs for her clients that are clinically and working in facilitating meditation workshops with outstanding results. And again, I am honored to have her back again, because meditation, we're going to be talking about meditation. Actually, the title of this show, this particular show, is Being King of Your Realm. Being King of Your Realm. I know there are a lot of people that are listening and we're like, whoa, where is this going? You'll see. Introduce my guest. Introducing Shechem Amhetra M. Ma'at. Drum roll, please. Thank you so much for being my special guest. I'm so happy to have an opportunity to speak with you again.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity, and greetings to all of your Blog Talk Radio, Jawanza for Life listeners. It's been, as I was saying earlier, it's been since 2017 now, 4 years since we last talked, and it's just perfect timing in the world to bring meditation back to the fore in a way that's really applicable to everyday life and challenges.
Oh, it most certainly is. When you talk about timing, oh my God, it is a perfect time. I mean, it's always a good time to meditate, but when, like you mentioned, when you think about everything that's happening right now, I can't think of a better time to share with our listeners the importance of meditation. And for those who might not even know what it is, you might be new to this path, you're going to get an education. You're going to get an education today. You know, as mentioned, Shekhem Damhetra is co-founder of The Managed Mind Incorporated. If you could, Shekhem, just tell our listeners a little bit about your company and what was it that led you to start a company that has as its aim and goal such a high goal.
Yes, absolutely. No worries. Back in 2010, I was transitioning out of one job and looking for another, and it was at a time when, you know, meditation and meditation companies were coming to the fore. And, you know, when I looked around and I listened to the people who were promoting meditation in the way that they do, I saw a gap, you know, in what people were learning, and wanted to fill that gap based on the benefits that I have had as a result, that I have and have had as a result of, you know, my being a priesthood member in the Aseraset Society. I've had such an outstanding education in regard to how to make meditation a very practical tool and seeing its applicability to real-world, everyday circumstances in a way that is not being taught right now. Mm-hmm. And so my husband and I developed a company, and we've been having the benefit of, you know, making use of this great knowledge in a way that, you know, helps everyday people who might otherwise not come across this kind of information to make some changes in their lives for the better. One, I have been working with Dr. Tyus in Washington, mm-hmm. D.C., who has for the last, I think, 2 years now been the number one doctor in D.C. And what she saw was there was a need to have some complementary services available to her patients in addition to, you know, standard medical therapies. And meditation was one that, you know, I began working in her office to do. Again, it's been since 2012 that I've been offering it there in her office. And what we find is that people who are struggling, you know, with the effects of stress in the body, right, or the effects of stress in the mind, stressors, I have to use the correct technical term, stressors, and how they respond to those stressors, those life circumstances, translation, the people and the circumstances that challenge us to grow beyond our preconditioned notions about who we are and what we can achieve. You know, when those things come up, we need a tool, and there it just isn't there. You know, at large in the community, you know, like Dr. King said, you know, we have guided missiles and misguided men. We don't have the education that teaches us about the faculties that lie within us, and how to access them and make use of them, you know, in our real everyday lives. So that's why Managed Mind, you know, was developed, to give people that assistance.
Well, why do you think, for example, that meditation, with all of its benefits, I mean, mm-hmm. there have been studies done, you know, on meditation, the effects of meditation, the benefits
Absolutely.
Of meditation, yet
Absolutely.
You'll find that it's not as mainstream. It's still, you know, kind of relegated to a particular segment of society,
mm-hmm.
you know, those people who meditate,
right.
you know. you know. But, I mean, it could be so beneficial for business people, for parenting. I mean,
Absolutely.
There's just so many aspects that meditation can help people with. Why do you think it's not more mainstream?
Probably, you know, related to its economic impact, you know, right? As you know, in the larger society, yes, that would be the most diplomatic way I could say that.
It benefits to it, and this should be taught in school. I mean, they should start the school there. I mean, I remember when I was coming up, I don't know if they still do it. You know, everybody said the Pledge of Allegiance.
Right.
It would be a great way to start for a child to start their day. If they didn't start it at home meditating, at least by the time they got to school, they knew that before they even started working their brain, that they were going to take a few moments, you know, and even just to center themselves. And, you know, I'm sure that there would have to be some benefit in just taking a few moments just to sit silently. And, of course, I know that when it comes to, you know, meditation, that it's not just about sitting and being quiet, that there's a, you know, there's a goal in mind and there certain things that can be done in that space. But it just seems like it would be a great way for, you know, children to start their day.
Absolutely. It's a great way for all people of all ages to begin their day as well as to end it. There are so many benefits that meditation provides, from all the way, you know, medically from, and, you know, I'm not advocating meditation solely as a medical answer, you know, a therapy, in, you know, just by itself, but we know that it, because of the way that it affects the nervous system, that, and its activity on the parasympathetic division of the nervous system, that rest and digest part of the nervous system, that it's going to quiet the, you know, the, and calm the nervous system in such a manner that it increases digestion and it boosts immunity. You know, it has all these, it lowers blood pressures. I've seen results where, personally, where it has helped to reduce glucose levels, and that's in part because of the stress reflex and, you know, the chemistry that's involved in the stress reflex with, you know, throwing sugars into the bloodstream in order to have the energy to handle whatever the stressor is. If you calm your nervous system, you do this particular breathing in a particular way, at a particular rate, then you're going to affect, you know, that parasympathetic activity and help it to restore the natural calm and optimized function of the body, minus, you know, health issues and genetic factors and that kind of thing. Environmental factors, we have to look and see what's going on. But in terms of quieting thoughts, quieting, you know, the chatter, if you have a good technique, you know, you'll be able to quiet that down so that you can see clearly. You can activate regions in the brain that will help you to be more just and fair, to be able to give the other person, you know, audience, where otherwise you might, you know, be very dominating in your view and not be able to hear the other person. Helps you to be objective and to calm the waters, if we could think waters of the mind, let's create that kind of imagery, so that you can see far more clearly. Because otherwise, we just act and respond as a result of our predispositions, you know, whether that's anger, fear, frustration, you know, sadness, depression, we'll always respond out of those mechanisms of the certain lower regions in the brain, the what we call the animal brains, if we don't take the time. So yes, you have a child who's coming from, you know, some circumstances before they start their day, starting with class with a meditation. We used to teach it in the middle school in which I taught. You know, you do meditation. We had a whole technique and a strategy for students to relax their bodies, and we find that they excel better in their academic studies and testing, so it's absolutely, and in their interactions, so it's absolutely beneficial to students, for sure.
You know, you mentioned something that I think a lot of people don't even consider when they think about meditation. You mentioned that, you know, there's certain meditations that can even help you be just or fair, you know, and that's getting into a morality, you know, piece. And I think that when people think of meditation, you know, they think of it absent that, you know, absent that function, absent that benefit, you know, or even not even being aware in many cases that it could be used for that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, again, there's just so many different benefits to meditation. But now there may be some people who are hearing this show for the first time, or maybe, you know, just new to the whole meditation thing. And they may wonder, well, are all meditations the same? I mean, if I just, you know, I've seen people, you know, doing meditation, and, you know, if I just do what they do, I mean, will all meditation grant me the same result? Could you speak on that?
Okay. Will all meditations grant me the same result? No, in the sense that if you're not able to attain to what we call the meditation state, and I'd like to define it based on science in order to help us, you know, gain an understanding of what it is. And in order to do that, I have to talk about the brain and the fact that, yes, and brainwave activity.
Yes.
And how there are these, you know, these four primary brainwave states, and they each have their own functionality. And so if we start from the top down, we would start with beta, come down to alpha, then come down to theta, and finally reach delta. So we find that in beta, we're at the uppermost, the fastest, you know, upper end of the brainwave speed. There are gamma and epsilon waves, but for our discussion today, beta, alpha, theta, and delta are the primary brainwave patterns that we experience throughout the day and throughout life. And so we start with beta. We find that we have this brainwave pattern that gives us this functionality to be able to pay attention to the external world. It gives us this capacity to interact and stay focused on what's going on outside of us. So, you know, we need it when we're driving. We need it when we're cooking. We need it when we're, you know, at work. We just, you know, if we're engaged in anything externally, you know, we need this beta brainwave pattern. And it is also the brainwave pattern where we, what's called, declare our will, meaning we make a statement. We say, you know, I need to lose weight. I want to lose weight. Or I want to be more patient with my children. Or I want to be more caring with my partner. You know, so we make these statements. So I want to get to work on time, you know. And so we make these statements. But the part of our being that carries those statements out is a very, very different aspect, you know, if we speak from that in terms of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this beta brainwave pattern, this is an important statement, so I'm going to say it rather slowly. In the beta brainwave, we play out the patterns of behaviors, we can call them conditionings, that are stored in our nervous system and our memory. All right, so then, and that relates to a certain rate of breathing, you know, which is above 12 breaths per minute. Right, so 12 to about 38 or so breaths per minute. The brain is oscillating 12 or more cycles per second in terms of electrical output. But when we slow our breathing down and we breathe more deeply, you know, we go between 7, you know, 12 breaths per minute. When we slow down, it affords us this capacity to go within, to maintain attention and focus inwardly. It also activates that parasympathetic part of our nervous system. You know, it's called the rest and digest part of our nervous system. See, beta uses a great deal of energy, vitality, to be maintained, but alpha is that is a restorative brainwave pattern. It also helps us with learning. It helps us to be creative, to imagine our goals and objectives. And it is the first of the two brainwave patterns that relates to the meditation state. When we slow our breathing down even more, and we get to like 3, 3.5 breaths per minute at the lower end, we find that we're greatly internalized to the point where we are not aware of our external environment. And in this brainwave pattern, we take as real what we imagine. This brainwave pattern and access to this pattern of this depth of brainwave activity has been utilized by, you know, Olympiads and performers and actors. I mean, all kinds of people make use of this understanding that we can create behaviors, we can channel and change behaviors if we go into this meditation state and see ourselves functioning, you know, as we will in the meditation state as practice, almost a term we could think of as prehearsal. Not rehearsal, you know, playing old patterns back, but prehearsal, seeing ourselves functioning in new ways. And so that's, you know, really powerful brainwave pattern. And then we get down to, you know, 0.5 breaths per minute, which is really slow. And then up to maybe 3-4 breaths per minute. We're in the sleep state where attention and focus is, you know, completely internalized. We're in this deep, deep restorative, hey, I was asleep, I don't know what happened, brainwave pattern. And so if we define meditation, we have to define it as the brainwave patterns of alpha and theta, which are between being fully awake and attentive to the external world and being fully asleep, you know, totally and completely internalized, where, this is an important part, we can see ourselves acting and functioning in new ways and program ourselves to respond with peace, you know, in the face of adversity, to see ourselves calm, just, fair, moral in the face of the challenges that we have every day. So that's what we do, you know, at Managed Mind. We help people to do that for the goals that they are seeking to achieve, to really learn how to access the meditation state, which we can define now as alpha, primarily at the beginning, and then theta, we make use of the theta brainwave as well, but to help them achieve that. So will all meditations render the same result? No, because you have to slow breathing down to a certain rate to get to alpha. You might sit quietly, but your brain will produce all kinds of thoughts. You know, you'll have these thought drifts that come through. So no, the answer is no. There's a specific technique that and process that is required to achieve the meditation state, to understand what it is, how it feels to you, so that you can know that you're there, and then begin to make use of the meditation state. See, people think about meditation, oh, I'm just going to do a meditation. They don't understand that meditation is a vehicle. It's a bridge between, you know, hearing, you know, that I'm a divine being, you know, to hearing that, you know, I can achieve my goals, you know, if I just focus and I organize well and I take my time, you know, we might get a great plan, but we might not have the habit or personality, let's use that word, to follow through on that. We need something to help us see ourselves in the moment, you know, rather than jumping up and doing the things you usually do, following your plan, or realizing that, you know, as I am a divine being, and we can cover that in a few moments, you know, if that is true, that means that I am not anger, and I am not frustration, and I am not, you know, an Aries, and I have to act a certain way, you know, so we are more than we think that we are. We are like spectacular. When I think about the brain and how it functions and what it affords us, and how I've seen it work, you know, in real world circumstances with my clients, and you know, throughout, you know, in the Sarasota Society, seeing how it's benefited so many people, it's just amazing. It's a spectacular tool. It should be offered to everyone. You know, that's our vision. You know, that men, women, and children throughout the world will learn to use meditation as an applied technology, right, to enhance their outlook and the outcomes in life. I mean, that's what we're here for.
You mentioned that we are divine beings. How important is it to make that distinction? Because if you ask the average person, you know, why they got angry or why they got upset, you know, in a particular situation, the justification is normally, well, at its core, well, I'm human. You know, what do you expect? You know, come on now, I'm human. You know, come on, give me a break. Give me a break. I'm human. You know, that's why I got mad. That's why I got jealous. That's why, you know, I experienced road rage. You know, that's why I lost my cool. I'm only human. We're divine.
That's right.
You know, so could you share with us why that distinction is very important, and the role that meditation can play in helping us to make that shift in awareness from being that, accepting the fact that we're more than just human beings.
Okay. So, and that's a show by itself, but I will work to, you know, encapsulate what we're saying. I'd like to just help us understand, everyone understand, and to say out loud that, you know, it's our image of who we are that determines how we function and speaks to whether we're going to be successful, resilient, persevering, or not. And if we if we understand that emotions play a role, image and emotions play a role in our ability to achieve our goals, if we understand that, you know, we look at our true nature as understanding that it's peaceful, that if in the, as we say, in the body, there's an indwelling intelligence that's guiding and controlling and protecting all of the functions of the body. It's controlling in the world, you know, the movement of the planets and the stars. And when we connect with that indwelling intelligence, when we connect with that intelligence, whether we say divine intelligence, divine being, if we say creator, you know, the grand universe, you know, universe means one song, so there's only one life in the world. So if we connect with that and we understand that that is who and what we truly are, clothed in a physical body, you know, and if you study astrology, you know, you have these charts and it describes a certain set of, you know, predispositions, but it does not describe who you are by your true and divine nature. And that that identity is peaceful, like clear, calm waters, which you can see and reflect upon, that identify you as that, as true and divine. If that is what you are, then your ability to accomplish goals becomes very, very different. Then now, if I stand on the basis that, you know, within me there's this unbiased, unjudgmental part of my being that's very, very lawful, you know, it acts and functions in a particular way every time, then I can rest on those laws. I can rest on that knowledge. And this idea of being peaceful, this understanding that we are peaceful by nature, you know, I teach it in the meditation program that I offer, because we don't even know that it's already there. We're peaceful by nature. You know, by that I mean without effort, like a tree grows towards the sun by its nature, like turtles when they're first born go out to the, find their way to the water by nature. You know, that's already within them. What's within us is this capacity and this ability to be peaceful in the face of anything and every challenge that could possibly come up. And this is where our modern educational system has, you know, failed us. And it's not even about race or economic status. It's just about being, you know, missing something that's very, very important. And that fact is that it is our nature to be peaceful. And we can see that when we are undisturbed, when we're satisfied with life, when we feel safe, when we're, I think those are the best terms that, you know, speak to it. When you feel safe, you're satisfied, you're calm and relaxed. It optimizes the function of your brain. It optimizes the function of all your bodily systems. And that rests within you. And when you learn to do deep breathing in the right way, it helps, as I was speaking about in terms of brain waves, if you learn how to do it in the right way, then you can access that peace that's there, just waiting for you to come home, as it were, to realize it's there. And so we, you know, teach meditation first and foremost to help people identify with that peace and that calm. And then we do meditation and meditation scripting to help people, what's called scripting, where it's a guided, written-out meditation, to see people acting and functioning in the manner that best assists them in the real-world circumstance.
So, and I don't want to take the conversation somewhere else, because I know we're talking about meditation, but you talked about peace being our nature. Mm-hmm. But there are people who would look out at their life and, you know, just looking at the world around them and seeing mm-hmm. things that are happening, working jobs where they
right.
can't stand the supervisor, you
right.
know,
that's right.
in relationships that, you know, they think are stressing them out or they think is the source of their pain. And different people that are just doing, you know, they're thinking that these people are doing this to me. You know, just there are so many different things that could challenge that peace. I mean, you talked about the still waters. It always seems like there's somebody trying to throw a rock in the water to cause ripples. You
mm-hmm.
know, would you say then that these challenges or these things that is the purpose of the challenges? That because mm-hmm. if we're going to learn peace, that we have to at least in order to know peace, do you have to know the opposite of peace to know peace or to learn it? And are these challenges, these situations that we might think are against us if we don't know any better, are we to interpret them as that is a test for me? And because if I can view this situation as a test, as mm-hmm. opposed to being against me, for example, if I'm going to school and I have to take a test, I don't think that the test is against me. You know? So if I view it as a test, would you say that that is the purpose of the challenges, to be viewed, in fact, as a test, and that if we pass the test peacefully, or if we engage with the test peacefully, then we grow?
Absolutely. the beautiful thing is that this truth is applicable everywhere. Meaning, I like boxing is an interesting analogy, because in order to be a world class athlete, if you say I want to be a great boxer, like Muhammad Ali, he was such a great example of how you use meditation and repetition to see yourself accomplishing a goal. You know, as he went around, speaking about, I float like a butterfly, I sting like a bee, and, always seeing himself as the greatest and the best. I mean, he was certainly an advocate and a proponent and a real-world example of, constant repetition and seeing yourself accomplishing a goal. So, in the boxing ring, you might say, I want to become a great boxer, and you're jumping rope, you're using your muscles in order to, learn how to hit the heavy bag and so forth, but there's some discomfort in that. Mm-hmm. There's some challenge in that, and in every level you're being challenged to go beyond, what you think your capacity is. And so life is that way too, but you have to have an understanding of what the goal of life is. Because if you don't understand, what the whole purpose is, then you'll, not understand the life circumstances. And so, from my training as a comedic priest and my ability, my seeing it play itself out so beautifully in my own life and the lives of everyone, on the planet, and my clients in particular, we come to understand that we are divine, right, created by the Supreme Being, who has created the world to experience the world. And that, with that in mind, there's been this beautiful, in a very ordered and organized way, life, started out in its most simplest form, and then grows in greater and greater complexity. So, we start with amoebas and single cell organisms, and then we come all the way out to the human. So it just as if you were a writer and you were writing a story, you created that story and you beautifully, beautiful verbiage and, cinematography, you could just kind of see how this could all go. It would be, and of course a good story's got, protagonists and antagonists, and, you're not going to watch the story where everybody's just skipping down the road. There has to be some challenge to the protagonist. And so in life, that challenge, the divine part of us that we are is, who the story is about. That's our lives, who the story is about. And through the circumstances and situations in our lives, those are the seeming challenges that are there to help us realize I am divine. I can be peaceful in the face of adversity. I can, calmly respond when otherwise my heart would be racing, and I would, falter in my thinking and not being able to draw that word up that I was looking for or say it in this way that when I leave the situation, man, everything comes to me that I should have said. That whole hindsight is 20/20. What it's really saying is that once I'm out of the critical circumstance where I was so tense, I wasn't breathing deeply, I wasn't breathing calmly, I hadn't practiced and prepared myself to handle, this my disposition maybe to anger or my disposition to be neglectful or ignore issues that need to be addressed. I hadn't practiced. I'm just following my usual behavior pattern of tension. But then when I an hour later or 2 days later, I realized because I'm calm and relaxed, I'm outside of that circumstance that I viewed as against me, now all these great ideas come to mind. Well, those great ideas were already there. We just couldn't access them because of the brainwave pattern that we were in. We were in that beta brainwave pattern, in that survival brainwave pattern, and we were responding from the lowest part of our capacity to respond in the most survival technique, part of our brain where, you know, it's just about us, and I got to prove that I'm right. And we know it makes it so that we don't hear other people well. We don't cooperate well. We can't achieve, we can't remember what we have stored in our, you know, in our memories or in our bodies as the right thing to do. We just act out of the, you know, animal reflex for survival. And what's interesting is that not only is it about your personal, your body, like this stress reflex, you know, it's really a survival mechanism. And it's not only about survival of your body, which it was in its most primal time in our lives, you know, it's about surviving, you know, being a caveman and dinosaurs, you know, and wild tigers on the Serengeti and all of that. It's now we're defending our wrong ideas about who we are. And we're defending our right to be angry and to express our thoughts and have our say and speak our truth, when in reality, all we're saying is I've got a set of predispositions that undermine my ability to think clearly, to be just and fair, to manage the circumstances in a circumspect way, bringing in all the factors and, you know, being able to analyze and look and see the interdependence and interrelationship that these things have, the now has on the future, you know, and the past has on the now, you know, on the present. And we surrender, we capitulate to the animal, and we become slaves of past behavior patterns. And so in order to become king of your realm, right, now we have to take awareness, be aware that I have a predisposition to walk away from challenges. You know, I just go, and then, I walk away and do what I want anyway. When really the person that's coming to us and saying, you know, you would probably do much better if you, you know, on your job, you'd probably do much better if you really spoke up about what you see here at the office that needs to be done. If you really, you know, stand up and you go, well, no, because nobody's going to listen, nobody's going to hear me. And then there's the non-development of your character and your ability to, you know, weigh in and make what you're doing better and get those accolades in your resume. So, you know, we have all
these doesn't
things.
Necessarily mean passivity.
Say that again?
Peace doesn't necessarily mean passivity.
Oh, absolutely not.
Because there might be people that interpret that, okay, just, you know, because they have these images of people meditating, just sitting around being, you know, being.
Yes, absolutely. I had a client once who said that. She's a lawyer, well-established lawyer. It was recommended to her that she'd come and take, the Managed Minds program. And she said, look, if I do this, am I going to end up being one of those, you know, just do whatever you say? You know, she used some other terms, but I want to be polite here. She's like, I just can't be that. And
okay.
I, helped her to understand absolutely what we're talking about. If we're talking about being peaceful, we're saying that within you there is this capacity to be so stable and so, I'm using the word calm, so composed that you could speak what needs to be said in a manner that isn't threatening so that the other person can hear you. You know, it affords you the capacity where your disposition might be, you know, maybe you're a fiery, you know, maybe you're an Aries or a Scorpio, you know, and you have the ability, you know, you're really good with words and you can slice people up really well, you know, without ever cursing and just, you know, let them have it. But in this case, you realize that you need to be more accommodating in the way that you speak and give the other person, you know, your ear rather than, you know, the floor rather than dominating the conversation. There's all kinds of ways that the peace that we are can facilitate, you know, our ability to function and succeed in life circumstances. It's a platform where you're unbiased by your own predispositions, so that you can be successful and bring to the situation what's needed. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. You know, and you know, something you mentioned, you know, people defending, you know, their wrong ideas. And what's interesting about that is, and I think at some point in each of our lives, we've all probably done it, but you know, I'll give you an example. You could be in a it could be somebody in your family. It could be a relative, and this person say owes you money, okay? And you and that person fall out behind that. I mean, you just you might even stop talking behind that.
Mm-hmm.
But then that person dies, and then it doesn't matter. You realize that the money really, you know, the money doesn't hold as much meaning as it did when the person was alive. You just let it go. You know, it's like, wow,
mm-hmm.
it really wasn't
mm-hmm.
that deep, you know. And you really wish that you had continued to speak with the person, and
that's
you know
right.
that, you know, because now that they're gone, you might feel like, oh wow, I wasted, you know, all this time. You know, we wasted all this time being upset with one another or not talking, or
that's
you know
right.
what I mean. So you know, just that whole defending the wrong idea, and I'm sure that comes out of the wrong identification. You
absolutely
just. You're feeling justified because you're figuring, okay, I'm only human. But let's talk, if we could, for a moment, Shechem,
mm-hmm.
about the be in being. To be is like, to me, when I thought about it, it's like, okay, to be is like to exist. So if I'm existing as the king of my realm, that's my existence. You know, I am, that's who I am. My existence is not, that's how I exist. I mean, I'm going to be the king of my realm, or in a woman's case, the queen of her realm, the king of my realm, I'm going to be that. So to be it, then I have to, that's the essence, that's getting at the core of who I am. And so then I guess that would lead to the question of, who am I? And
mm-hmm.
would that be another show?
No. There are a lot of concepts. Just the words that you use create a lot of, you know, that we'd have to define each of those terms. But, you know, in relationship, you know, to what you were saying, yes, you know, when if I say I'm king of my realm, then I have to understand who I am as king. And, of course, you know, my superior knowledge and education is that I'm divine by nature. And so if I'm divine, then I don't, there's no threat, nothing can threaten me. The only thing that can happen is I can have a circumstance for which I'm unprepared, and so maybe I don't know how to respond. But if I'm peaceful in the face of adversity, if I'm peaceful, if I'm calm, if I understand, you know, if I have an understanding of the way that life is going to show up to challenge me, to help me to grow into my understanding of who I am as a divine being, as being peaceful by nature, being able to be resilient, there's all kinds of concepts that go into this, then when I respond to that circumstance, I'm going to respond very, very differently than I would if I identify with myself as being human. If my person, I say, oh, I'm human, or I'm an Aries, or I'm a Gemini, or whatever these other terms are in, you know, the way that I view and identify, you know, who I am, and how you identify your person is what you're giving yourself permission to do, and the permissions that you give to other people and how they interact with you. So if I say, well, I'm shy, you know, when you come into social circumstances, people will try to talk with you and you'll, you know, miss opportunities because you're, well, I'm shy, or, you know, I don't want to put myself out there, or, you know, Maybe your persona is bright and shiny and you want to see it, when really, you know, you need a more demure, you know, approach. So identification with your true nature as being divine, composed, peaceful, resilient, I mean, there's all these things that we can say, you know, is critical and crucial to how we proceed and how we choose to accomplish our goals, you know, as well as our ability to enjoy the outcome.
Well, what about the realm? What is the, what realm, you know, if we're being king of our realm, now, are we talking about, because they're different, you know, they're different layers to this, so we could talk about the emotional realm, we could talk about our physical realm. I mean, so when you talk about your realm, or is it just all-encompassing? When you say king of your realm, that's your existence, your, you know, where you are, and your, the earth could be your realm. You're in the earth realm. I mean, so what realm, when you say realm, could you give our listeners an idea of, so they can kind of, you know, get a, frame it in a way that they can understand where exactly you mean. Do you mean the our emotions, being ruler of our emotions, physical realm, I mean our home life, I mean, or all of the above?
I'm speaking about the responses that we have, our identity and our responses that we have to life and life challenges, and our approach to that. So, if we say, well, it's, you know, we're, you know, COVID. Let me just, you know, speak about current circumstances. This pandemic has really been a game changer in terms of, you know, how we function and what we do on a regular basis. You know, how we move from day to day, how we interact, for sure. And if we, you know, look, I'll just use an example of a client circumstance in a workshop I was holding. He was saying that, you know, having to school at home, which is different than homeschooling, you know, having to school at home was really challenging him because he was already working himself, you know, so he's got his own Zoom calls and things he's doing. Then he's got his family, and he was working with, I think it was a daughter, and, you know, she was struggling, and he wanted to help her. He genuinely wanted to help her. But when you're, you know, in the working realm with adults, it's a different disposition than you are when you work with children. And he was struggling making that shift. And so by, you know, working through the meditation process, you know, really helping him to see that he can be calm, he can be relaxed, and he can break down what a fraction is, you know, so his, you know, help his daughter with her math, to see that he could be patient and to just see where she is and help her where she is, that he could do that. And so that was his meditation focus. You know, we write it all out. It's called a meditation script. We write it all out and really help you to see what the issue is, you know, where you are in the circumstance. So being king of your realm has to do with what thoughts do I allow into my mind? What foods do I allow into my body? What kind of social interactions do I allow my person to become involved in? And so at the most personal level, this is what we're talking about. You know, you can't control the government. You might think that we can through voting, but that's not necessarily true. But we are absolutely in control of how we respond to each and every circumstance in our life. And if I could just stretch this out a little bit further to say, you know, we come into this world with, you know, these energies, and we're taught that it's okay to be angry. It's okay to be sad. You know, you have a right to, you know, you have a right to just let that mull and soak in, you know, your frustration. You know, then you talk about it with your friends and perpetuate the chemistry, you know, the actual chemistry in the body that the stressor creates in your body because of how you're viewing it. So now your heart is racing, you've got extra glucose coursing through your veins, you're in fight or flight mode, or freeze mode. There are three of those Fs, you know, fight, flight, freeze. And so, you know, you're stuck. And every time you talk about it, you call it all up again, and you reanimate those same feelings and chemistry in the body. And so being king or queen of your realm has to do with understanding that I have to pay attention to everything that I allow to pervade in my thoughts, my how I respond emotionally. And it might seem okay to give into those emotions and feelings, but if they're undermining my health, then I'm living outside of my true nature, because there's an indwelling intelligence in me that's working to equilibrate everything and keep my body functioning at its optimum. But when I allow grief or sadness or anger or intense excitation, you know, that whole thing about the drama that our young people are getting involved in, you know, just that constant excitation, that also undermines one's health and well-being and throws us out of harmony with the optimized functioning of our body. And so if we're going to be, in order to be the king and queens that we are of our realm, we have to pay attention to the thoughts, the feelings. We have to live in harmony with the cycles of the year, the cycles of the day. I mean, there's all kinds of things that we would need to do in order to optimize our functioning. And we need to learn how to reestablish and restore that peace that's within us. And that's one of the beautiful things about meditation. It helps you go right back there and dwell and be there, and feel it. You know, acknowledge the relaxation in the body that's the physical support of the peace that we are, in addition to the right thoughts that are the mental expression of the peace that we are. And that information, you know, is not out there, you know, in general realms of higher education. You know, it's through the Osirian initiation, you know, offered by the Osirisset Society, that gives this foundational understanding of how we grow and how we can, how we need to align ourselves with the divine laws that govern the world and the universe, and our ability to develop into this highest part of our being, which is not human at all, but is divine. I'll stop there because I could go on for hours. This is my.
We'll do a part two if we need to.
My toes are wiggling, you know. I'm just.
So now there are people, Shechem, that, you know, when we think about meditation again, of course, you know,
mm-hmm.
people think
yes.
that, okay, I'll use it to, you know, long day at work, I'll just come home, I'll meditate, or before I start my day, you know, I want to meditate, or,
mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of people out here with challenges that we personally might not experience. For example, I gave the example of a person might, you know, be at a job where they just can't stand their supervisor, or they might be in a situation in a relationship. But then there are other people that have their tests or challenges on a whole nother level. I mean, you
mm-hmm.
might have a sister who gives birth, or a couple that gives birth to a special needs child,
mm-hmm.
you know, or
absolutely.
Somebody might find out from the doctor that they've got cancer or some,
absolutely.
You know, some curable, quote-unquote, disease, end quote.
Absolutely.
You know, so how could meditation assist, you know, them, an individual, in a situation like that? They's like, because there may be somebody listening to this show, and they're like, look, I need some help. I just came from the doctor, you know, I got a bad
mm-hmm.
report, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know my child. I love my child, but my God.
mm-hmm.
you, so how could meditation help?
Okay. Well, absolutely, because, you know, the mainstream educational process does not include personal development. You know, we falter at every turn as partners, as parents, as coworkers. You know, we're just responding out of a set of conditioned responses, you know, behavioral responses that we, you know, feel intensely. You know, we feel anger, we feel sad, we have this sense of sadness and gloom, and you know, over excitement. There are, you know, people who hold that, and they're just super bubbly, and it's just this heightened, you know, kind of you know, projection
mm-hmm.
of their energy. You know, we have all of those things, but our goal is to, you know, live in a calm and balanced way. And it doesn't. This is the beauty. Beautiful thing about a law, you know, and about science and nature. It doesn't matter what the challenge, how big, how small, how beautiful, how ugly, whatever terms we want to qualify it as. The truth is that, you know, we have this capacity to be composed and calm. We call it being peaceful, you know, by nature, so that we can. Be in the moment, in the present, fully present. You know, we hear that idea in mindfulness a lot. Be fully present in the circumstance of challenge as the situation needs.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how big, how small, you know. just share a personal story. I was a caregiver. I'm still a caregiver to my mom, who has Alzheimer's, severe dementia on the borderline of Alzheimer's. But that it wasn't the biggest challenge. That hasn't been the biggest challenge in my life. My biggest challenge was being present and caring for my father before he died, and being there with him when he did. Mm-hmm. And so what I discovered was that though I have sisters, they were not willing to be a part of the process when he got really sick.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right? One of them didn't want to go to the hospital, and the other was, they said, I just can't bear to see Daddy like that. I say, that was her scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one lived quite a distance away, so certainly understand what, you know, distance is, you know, certainly a whole other thing. But there was my other sister right there, present, 10 minutes away, who couldn't move. And even my father's sisters and his partner, you know, were so emotionally caught up that they were unable to make really important decisions. So this is what I mean by the peace. You know, you have to be able to maintain your composure so that you can look circumspectly at a situation and be able to respond appropriately. Okay?
Mm.
And so just a, you know, final moments circumstance that, you know, kind of surprised me. My father was released from the hospital into care at home. He really wanted to be home, so I facilitated that for him. And, you know, he gets home, and the ambulance brings him into the house, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, you know, I've done what my father really wanted. You could see the joy in his eyes that he was home. And then the nurse, she says, oh, here, honey, here's the medication. If he has this, you know, you give him this. And for a moment, I just stood there thinking, oh, my gosh, now I'm responsible for giving these, you know, life and death medications. I thought you were going to be here, you know? And so,
right.
So in that moment, I had to, you know, regain the moment of, you know, ill composure when I realized, oh, my gosh, I'm responsible for everything here. And I was able to do that because I understood that it was just me and that I needed to be calm and relaxed. And I had to organize the family and, you know, get the assistance that we needed. And, you know, it was just all the way through, even to the moments of being able to be fully present with him at the moment of passing, and to understand that passing isn't about me, it's about him.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we forget that. You mentioned that earlier, is only part of the reason I bring it up. You know, somebody dies, and we regret all the things that we should have said or shouldn't have said. You know, I stand, you know, completely at ease with all of the things that I did on his behalf, because I understood that the death was about him. And I prayed with him. I'm not Catholic, but I prayed the prayer that he would pray. And I, you know, assured to help him to make a peaceful transition, because that's what it's about resting in peace in his final moments. You know, that was the goal. And so when we talk about people's challenges, you know, I can just see, you know, one of the elders saying, child, God don't give you no more than you can handle. And so where does that come from? Why would somebody make that statement? Because it's understood somewhere in our past, from our ancestors, you know, from the culture, ancient cultures, that we understand that we have the capacity to face adversity in a calm and composed way, such that we can be fully present in the moment and be right in giving the moment what it needs.
And even if you have to accept a certain thing at that moment,
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean that your acceptance of it, of the present situation, doesn't mean that that situation cannot be changed. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like, I remember I heard Shechem Me'ab Neter, as a matter
mm-hmm.
of fact, mentioned
mm-hmm.
one time, sure, that you can't always, you can't always determine who's going to come and sit down at the table and play cards with you, but
that's right.
You can play. You have the ability to play the hand that you're dealt.
To play your hand,
you know
you're
what
dealt.
I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So you know
relationships are a nice place to really kind of see this. You know, we get attracted to people, right? We have attraction to people, and we meet them, and we socialize with them, and then we enter long-term relationships with them. And those relationships, understanding that the premise of all interactions in the world between, you know, in the human, is to realize that we are divine. Excuse me, please, and to grow into what Shechem or Shechem calls, you know, the Homo sapiens spiritualis. You know, where we're a spiritual being. You know, everything is geared towards that. And, you know, relationships are one of those places, those intimate places where, you know, you cannot escape the other individual. And you have to begin to make the adaptations and changes in the way that you believe that things should be, how you function when you're alone, and become cooperative and join together with someone else for a greater goal. But nobody speaks about relationships in that way, or how you should enter them appropriately, or how we should manage ourselves as we approach a relationship, or, you know, once we're in it, how do we move forward together amidst the myriad of differences that we have as two individuals. You know, there's all kinds of ways it's going to show up. Or being single. You know, here we are in this pandemic, and we're not able to socialize in the way that we usually do. And we're finding that, it's in the medical journals that there's this big depression, this surge in depression amongst all age sets, particularly young people. And so we have to look and realize that this is an opportunity to say and to look and say, hey, if I can't be with myself, if I'm dissatisfied within myself, how am I going to be with somebody else?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just different ways that we can take this opportunity that this pandemic is providing and use meditation as a tool to quiet, you know, the thoughts that are, you know, moving through us, and the obligatory errors that happen as we grow in through the different brains and human development process, you know, identifying with our circumstances rather than identifying with our true nature. It's a great opportunity to go back now and reclaim, you know, ourselves as kings and queens that we are of our realm, and say, you know, this whole anger thing that I've got, it's not working. And I need to go back and see myself in these circumstances, you know, in a calm and composed way. Or this drive I have to be in control of everything. If I can't control, you know, how it comes to me, you know, how I get to interact, when and where, do I have to wear a mask everywhere I go? You know, do I have these timelines? I can only be out during this time, and, you know, do I have to be 6 feet away? I mean, if we don't have the ability to adapt to life-threatening circumstances, that's problematic, you know? And so...
Pretty much,
you know.
So. Wow. I am really enjoying this interview, and I don't want it to end. I just want to keep on going. Ask you to talk about scripting. I know that is such an important part of the work that you do. It's almost, it seems, revolutionary. Because, again, when people think about meditation, they don't often think about writing. They think about breathing, you know.
Right,
so could you
right.
talk about scripting and the importance of it and the role that it plays in the work that you do and what you teach your clients?
Okay. So what we do with meditation scripting is just like a movie. Or if you were as an individual, you know, you might have your set of behaviors. But you're aspiring to function in a different way. But you have to see yourself in the same circumstances that trigger, you know, your usual behavior. But now you're going to see yourself in that circumstance responding, you know, diplomatically, or being able to delegate responsibility rather than trying to take it all on yourself, right? So in order to do that, because of the way the nervous system is and the way that we function predominantly in beta, we're going to continually play out old programs. So we have to slow our breathing down and enter the meditation states of alpha and theta so that we can go in now and change those behaviors. But what does that look, what does this new behavior look like? You know, oh, it looks like when I get to work, I see the things that need to be done and I assign capable people to accomplish them, as opposed to sitting down in my cubicle or sitting on my Zoom call writing all these notes about all these things I have to do and trying to do them all myself. So it's about seeing yourself in the triggering circumstance that triggers the ill behavior, the wrong thought, the overeating, the anxiety, whatever it is, and seeing yourself functioning from this peace that you are based on a lawful response.
It sounds like visualization.
It is. It is absolutely part of visualization. It's a big component of it, but it's also the right thoughts. Because if I go, if I'm sitting down and I'm closing my eyes and, you know, we do this. We enter the meditation state by throughout the day. It isn't just when we sit down and purposefully do so as we do in meditation. So throughout the day, I might sit down and go, I'm just overwhelmed. I can't possibly, you know, get all this done. And I don't know how these people expect me, you know, to do all this, you know.
I think we've all said that.
yes, we have, right? And so we repeat this mantra, this chant, I can't, this is too much, I don't know how, this is impossible. And so then now, and we see ourselves stuck. We're sitting in the chair, we're laying on the bed, we're slumped over the desk, I mean, whichever way it is, you know, and we're seeing ourselves. And so that becomes the behavior that we perpetuate because we haven't seen ourselves functioning in any other way. And so this, you know, understanding of our true nature, our identity, with all its capacities, you know, that we can accomplish so much in harmony with the cycles and times, we can accomplish our goal if we imagine it. That movie, The Secret, gave people the understanding that if you see yourself, you know, feeling the, I don't know if you've ever seen The Secret, but there's this scene where the guy's visualizing himself with a new car. He's visualizing, you know, pressing the gas, you know, and hearing the engine and, you know, grasping the wheel. Well, yes, we want to do that. But, man, wouldn't it be great if we not only visualized ourselves with cars and the things, you know, to get around, but if in our relationships we saw ourselves being patient and we saw ourselves being cooperative and sharing the workload or sharing in, you know, the accomplishment of tasks that needed to be done. And we, there's a song that says, I should have made her feel more important. It's a song, song called Floods. You know, he realizes that in the course of their relationship that, you know, he should have made her feel better, you know, given her validity in her position, you know, as the female in the relationship. So it's all these ways. What if we saw ourselves acting in those ways? What would it do for us? Well, first, it would, through the meditation process, would help us to harmonize and normalize our bodily functions. Secondly, it would help us to identify with the peace that we are. Then we would see ourselves acting more peaceful. It would uplift our relationship, make our relationships go better, and then we could know that we have done our best in our relationship. Not your best worst, anger, frustration, sadness, depression, but your best, which is, you know, a divine response, a very high quality that is accessed when we do this meditation breathing. And if anybody would like to, you know, have some resources for that, I highly, highly recommend Shechem Shechem Ra'u Nefer Amen's book, Stress Free for Life, which gives meditation scripts, and it talks about the different things we need to do and to the thoughts that need to be placed into the mind to help restore peace, and gives instruction about meditation and some of the undermining behaviors that we have that in an attempt to cope with the challenges that life offers to us, you know, people choose alcohol and drugs. Whether your drug of choice is sugar or alcohol, you know, because a donut is a drug. You know what I mean? That cake is a drug. The ice cream is a drug. It's the sugar in there. You know, you have to understand that it's a coping mechanism. But why would you just cope when you could actually be the king of the realm, queen of the realm, and handle the circumstance in a way that's appropriate to the circumstance? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Wow. You know, this is one of those shows. It's like you know that you got to find a good place to stop, but it's like they're all good places, and it's like you could always keep going and going and going and going. So, Shechem, I just want to give you an opportunity to share your information with our listeners. You work with groups, organizations. You work with people one-on-one. How can people get in contact with you? Please share your information and any final thoughts you may have for our listeners.
Oh, thank you very much. I have my head down, you know. I don't have a website. However, I generally work by referral, and I work with companies who, again, make those referrals to their employees and so forth. So in this case, you would contact me at themanagedmind@gmail.com. Or my phone number is 240-670-6463. To contact me if you would like more information or to be a part of the workshops that I offer for your business. Maybe your company is looking for someone to come in and teach meditation. I could certainly do that. We offer a particular workshop called Introduction to the Science of Meditation and the Peace Within, and then the Stress Deprogramming Meditation, which belongs to and was created by Dr. Raung Nefer Amen. We help people to do that practice, and we refer them to his book for further study and information, or you can go through the 6-session program that I offer to teach us meditation and other meditative technologies to help address past issues and current ones so that you can optimize, you know, your relationships, your interactions, and your outlook and outcomes.
Shechem, this has been a powerful, powerful show. I'm going to have you back as soon as I can, and we can do either part two or we can continue. We can pick another topic, because I guarantee you, listeners, I know that you've grown. I know that you've enjoyed this as much as I have. And, you know, Shechem, as I'm just praying that the universe continue to open doors for you, that you might continue the work that you do, because it's so necessary. Thank you so much for your time. Yeah. It's been a great, great, powerful interview. You shared a lot of information, and I can't wait to go back and listen to it again. Thank you so much. Any parting words for today?
No, I thank you very much for the opportunity. There's so much to say about meditation that goes far beyond what most people speak about, and it is my joy and passion to make sure that people have an outstanding meditation outcome when they first learn it. So I spend a great deal of time with my clients making sure that that happens for them. I help people who have tried meditating before and have not been successful really have great success, you know, going through this program. So I certainly offer people that opportunity to have that and have better outcomes with their meditation experience, and then to have better outcomes, you know, in the way that they handle themselves and become the king and queens of their, you know, realm, so that you can gain control over what you can control and, you know, be at peace with the rest.
Everybody, you didn't hear this show today. You came here on purpose. This show did not fall upon your ears by accident. I encourage you to give Shechem a call, because this could be the beginning. And for those who may have been even meditating and you think you got it down, you know, there's always more to learn. You might have just been meditating and might not have gotten into scripting. okay? Let's take it to another level, you know, just learn some
more.
You know, there's always more to learn, and I know that you know that judging from the information that you heard today, we didn't just hear about meditation. We heard her passion concerning meditation, and so I encourage everybody to give her a call. Shekhmet, again, I thank you. I thank you. I thank you. It's been truly an honor. My jaws have hurt, are hurting from smiling for over an hour. I thank you so much for everything, and look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you. Just in closing, if anyone is interested to learn some of the personal development programs that are offered by Alceraset Society, I'd like to offer them the opportunity to go to the Alceraset DC website and see what classes and things are being offered, because I don't do personal development. That's a process, and I'd like to offer them that opportunity, or to learn and go to dawinetwork.com to get the Osirian initiation so they can begin to gain those thoughts and laws that need to be put into the mind so they can optimize their functioning. I'd like to make sure that people have that opportunity as well. My goal is to teach the meditation side of it and help people with their meditation scripting. But for personal development and for personal growth, you need a program that, as is offered by the Osirian initiation. Just want to make sure that is, you know, really, really clear. And I'm so sorry that we didn't get a chance to take any questions. I hope we get the opportunity to do that at another time.
We will definitely will. And Taui, that's T-A-U-I Network. Did you say
yes.
.com or was that .org?
.com.
That's T-A-U-I Network.com. Okay. Thank you again, Shekhmet. Again, I don't want it to end, but it's not an
yes.
end. It's to be continued.
Yes. All right. Again, thank you for
everybody,
the opportunity.
My pleasure, and I know that my listeners have enjoyed it as well. Everybody, share this interview. All you have to do is copy. You can copy and paste it to whatever you do, don't try to remember what she said and share it with somebody else. Share the link. You know, just
yes.
share the link to the show. And for all of you new listeners, you can follow the show on Blog Talk, and if you follow, then you'll know whenever I do a show, you'll be notified of the date, the time, the guest, and the topic. So you'll know
Absolutely.
Next time, Shekhmet. So until the next time, everybody, thank you so much for your time. My name is Jawanza. Who am I? I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you?
Going on in the world today. Sometimes when I talk to you, well, I just don't know what to say. Except that, oh Lord, will you show us your way? Father, there's plenty of food. And people are hungry. There's plenty of love, and people are lonely. There's plenty of money, but not enough to spend. So much sadness and a whole. And there's no leader to follow.